Welcome to the Amazing Relationships Podcast with Kim Wilson, a space designed to help you create amazing relationships with yourself and others. Get ready to experience hope, love, and inspiration. Here's your host, Kim Wilson.
Welcome to the Amazing Relationships Podcast, Episode 1. I am Kim Wilson, your relationship guide. Today we're talking about moving on after infidelity. Some people have different definitions of what they consider to be infidelity or cheating. There have been heated debates about the validity of emotional and online infidelity. Either way you look at it, it can be very painful whether you're married, involved in a short-term or long-term relationship. For some people, experiencing that kind of betrayal leaves messages in their head that keep them from moving on from the past or hurt from it. To help us unpack this topic, we have special guest Dr. Laura Lewis. She is the founder of Atlanta Couple Therapy, located in Atlanta, Georgia. Dr. Lewis has conducted hundreds of seminars transforming relationships all over the world. She is affectionately called the Marriage Architect. Dr. Lewis is the author of the amazing book, Marital Peace. Dr. Lewis, welcome, and thank you for joining us on this podcast. How are you today?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Well, absolutely, and thank you for coming on. Well, let's get right to it. How do you define infidelity?
So I define infidelity based on there being some sort of break in trust. Now, this can happen emotionally. This can happen physically as well. And it's really based on the boundaries that the couple has established in their relationship. So, for example, couples have a range of views on what constitutes a boundary crossing. And so when I'm working with a couple, doing therapy with a couple, I help them be clear about what the boundaries that need to be established in their relationship, which might look different comparison to another relationship. For example, sometimes I see polyamorous couples where there's some agreed upon openness around the boundaries of the relationship. And so when there's an agreement and there is a crossing of boundaries outside of that agreement, that's where I would consider that infidelity.
Okay. Well, what are your thoughts? I hear your definition. What are your thoughts about emotional infidelity?
Emotional infidelity typically happens when the person feels like, oh, you just get me so well. You just understand me. And so sometimes a couple can be in a marriage or in a long-term relationship, and at some point they just get disconnected. They don't talk anymore. They don't ask each other how their day is going. They may not even see each other, like really look at each other in their eyes. And so over time in a committed relationship, that can start to build in loneliness, resentment. But then what happens? Then the person goes into the office and say the secretary notices their new tie or notices that new dress or new hairdo. That can feel so great because at this moment, the person is feeling unfulfilled in their relationship. And oftentimes I see full-blown physical affairs start out with an emotional affair where the person just feels like the other person gets them.
Now, that brings me to the point of communication, because communication is key. Because earlier you said, you know, they're not talking anymore, and then if somebody else is noticing that tie, all of that kind of goes into communication and using our words. Talk a little bit about communication.
It's something that happens when we're communicating that we feel heard, we feel understood, we feel validated through communication. And my experience has been, and the research also validates, that oftentimes we see women connecting first emotionally. And so when there is a connection where they feel like, oh, this person understands me and the communication is there, oftentimes we see for women that is the main driver for the relationship developing. Now, it's different for men. Typically, we see that for men, they can have just strictly physical affairs where it's no emotional ties at all.
I mean, I think that's interesting because you said it's typically women are connecting first emotionally. right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay, well, let me just kind of go somewhere really quick. Okay, now, when we think about cheating and infidelity, people typically think about, okay, the man is cheating. What about when women cheat? When women cheat, are they cheating for emotional reasons, you think, most of the time? Or is there any research that say that suggests it's more physical for them, or any reasons why they do it?
Why men cheat?
Why women cheat?
Why women cheat? Women cheat mostly because the emotional connection has been established. So for women, we tend to just to talk more, just in sheer words. There was a research study done that said women on average talk 20,000 words a day, and men, I think it was somewhere around 3,000. So just in sheer numbers, we can talk, ladies. We can really talk. And that's part of what happens in the bonding periods of the relationship, where the person just, they can't wait to talk to that other person. They feel excited to see that other person. And so that's how we see the affair relationships starting for women.
In your book, on page 154, you have a section in here, and the title is How Do Affairs Begin? Okay, and I know you kind of touched on that a few minutes ago. If somebody is noticing a tie or something like that, noticing something about the other person that, you know, one spouse may stop mentioning. Well, on this particular page, you have, you know, you have the different types of affairs, and you have assessing outside affair relationships. Let's talk a little bit, go a little bit deeper with how affairs start.
Okay, so affairs typically start off when there's some degree of either abandonment in the relationship or a loss of connection in the relationship. And that can happen many ways. That can happen through conflict. For some couples, they just argue all the time. And so they feel like, I'm just trying to avoid all this fighting all the time. And so they seek the affair relationship as a way to escape the constant conflict at home. And for other couples, we see different transitions can be a trigger for affairs. So, for example, when a couple transitions to parenthood, they don't have any kids and now they have children. This transition oftentimes takes a huge tax on intimacy. There are different things that happen in the body that create the exciting, the bonding hormones for a couple. So there are high levels of what's called oxytocin that's usually released in the beginning of the relationship. Around 2 years in, we see huge dives of oxytocin levels. And so this oxytocin is what bonds a couple in the beginning, but we don't live on that natural high. So naturally, we start to stabilize. And so during this period is when we see affairs taking place. And also, when a couple transitions to parenthood, we see huge decreases in oxytocin levels. For women, oftentimes the libido isn't there like it was at the early stages in the relationship. They're experiencing changes in their body, chemical changes in their body, and so we see affairs taking place during this time.
Okay. Well, what about when people say, when you may have had a couple to come to you during your practice, how do you respond when you hear people say, well, if they would not have done such and such, or if they would have done such and such, I would not have cheated. I mean, because in my mind, everybody is in control of their own action and their reaction. Do you hear that often?
I do. I hear that a lot. My practice, Atlanta Couple Therapy, I focus mainly on working with couples. And so for the most part, couples come in because something has happened. They don't come in to tell me how things are going so great, but it's because something like infidelity has occurred. And so when we're starting the process the infidelity, oftentimes defensiveness does come up, where I wouldn't have done this if you didn't do that. And that really doesn't do the couple any justice. They can't get anywhere with that type of frame of mind. Now, it is important that we explore some of those things that made the relationship vulnerable, because if we just focus on the infidelity but we don't look at, well, what was happening just before the infidelity happened, or what are some of the things that you haven't been doing to nurture the relationship on an ongoing basis, then it's likely that that couple is going to continue to struggle in their relationship. While at the same time, the person who had the affair, a key important part is their willingness to take ownership and responsibility for the impact of the affair.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, well, here's the big question, and this is what people, I think a lot of people want to know. Can we really move on after experiencing infidelity? Because a lot of times there's so much hurt and pain, and that level of betrayal, it just really keeps a lot of people from moving past the hurt. Can we really forgive and forget and just move on?
Yes. So the short answer is yes. We can move on. Now, the relationship is going to be different. It's not going to be the same relationship that it was then. And the reason why is because the way our brain processes trauma is different than how we process any other experience that we have. So, for example, say I get out of bed and I stub my toe. I'm going to remember that I stubbed my toe, the place that I stubbed my toe. I'm probably going to try to fix that area of the bed. It's the same when a couple of experiences, something like infidelity. That's why it's so difficult for the person to just forget what happened, because it's deeply encoded in the brain, that memory. And so it takes some work. It also takes some time. Research shows that it takes couples about a year to heal after infidelity. Now, that's a year of working on the relationship, not just a year of time just passing and now we're back and things are good. So it's definitely a process, but I have worked with couples that their relationship has actually improved after infidelity. So by the infidelity happening, it was kind of like a wake-up sign to say, hey, we got to get things back on track in our relationship. And so I saw relationship satisfaction increase after the affair.
Mm. I mean, well, how do we do that? Okay, I hear that we can move on, but how? How do we do that?
How do we move on? Well, one step is it's a choice, it's a decision. For the person who was cheated on, they have to make a decision that I'm not going to keep reliving this trauma. And that can be a difficult process, but counseling can certainly help. It's something about having a third party to facilitate the conversation that helps the couple move forward. My experience has been when couples try to have this type of dialogue about the affair, oftentimes conflict comes up, defensiveness comes up, the couple starts to blame one another. And so having a third party that can facilitate this conversation and really talk about it in a healing way is so critical.
Okay, so I'm hearing you say it's a mind change. You have to make a decision. It starts in the mind.
It starts in the mind for both people. I talk some about how it starts in the mind for the person that was cheated on, but also for the person who had the affair. It's a lot of mindset shifts that need to happen for this person. One mindset shift is moving away from blame, taking responsibility. Another mindset shift is, how am I prioritizing my relationship on a daily, on a weekly basis? How am I investing my time, my energy into my relationship? So both people have work to do.
You gave some really good nuggets there. Moving away from blame. I love that. And taking responsibility.
Yeah.
Yes, all of that. And I think you said something very key, too, counseling, just having that third party to facilitate, to help manage those feelings and for people to be able to express their emotions in a safe space. Because we have to take away judgment.
Yeah.
I mean, so you know what I think people really struggle with? It's like they say, okay, I'm making a choice. I'm changing my mind. I hear all of that, but I'm still struggling with forgiveness. It's like people, they want this, some specific steps. How do I forgive? And even though, you know, if you tell them it's a choice, you just got to, you know, talk to us a little bit about forgiveness.
Forgiveness plays a huge role in healing after infidelity. It plays a huge role. And that is a common feeling of, how am I going to forgive this person? How am I going to trust this person again? I need to safeguard my heart from experiencing the pain of this again. Sometimes that is what the internal dialogue of the person who is cheating on is saying to themselves. It's real. Now, forgiveness isn't something that can happen too early, right? It's not something that we can talk about day one, day two, day 10, day 15 in terms of the discovery of the infidelity. But it's something that usually happens in the last stage of the healing process, is introducing or thinking about forgiveness. And the way I look at forgiveness is agreeing that I give up all hope for a better yesterday. Yesterday has happened. There's nothing you could do about yesterday. The only thing that you could do is move forward, learn from what has happened, and put in place some things to bring restoration. And also I look at forgiveness as a commitment to the healing process. It's not necessarily about the other person. It's about this person who has experienced this pain, releasing themselves from having to hold on to that pain, making a decision that, you know what, I'm not going to let this eat me up inside. One thing we know about unforgiveness is that it impacts our body, our cardiovascular system, our immune system. Our body doesn't heal the same way when we're holding on to unforgiveness. So it's really a commitment to that person's their own healing.
Absolutely, absolutely, and I want to go to another area. I don't want to real quickly now. For some people who may be listening to this podcast, and they have experienced infidelity with their partner on a repeated basis, I want them to be able to walk away with some key information, because it's one, you know. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. I think when we connect to counseling and we focus on becoming the best human being we can possibly be, I don't think we'll hear a lot of stories of it happened to me 6 times. This person cheated on me 7 times. Because I think when you understand and know your worth, anybody just cannot have you, and you just can't have anybody in your life hurting you on that level, because I do know hurt people hurt other people, and you won't be in that space to accept a level of hurt. So when being a specializing in couple therapy, and you have somebody who has cheated or been unfaithful like 8 times and is chronic, what is your response to that? Because people can really get confused by messages when you say, hey, forgive, move on. How do you respond to that?
So the person who has been cheated on many times, oftentimes their defenses are going to be up, because it's something naturally in our body that wants to protect us from experiencing pain. And so for that person, oftentimes they are checking and rechecking things, and accountability and transparency play a huge role in moving the couple forward through the stages of healing. So like we talk about forgiveness, in order for forgiveness to happen and for that person to start to feel safe again in the relationship, is that person's going to need to be transparent around the areas where the breaking trust happened. So say, for example, the breaking trust happened around social media. Then that person needs to have some transparency around social media or their phone or text messages, wherever the deception took place in. And then that is a tough decision that they're going to have to make. Do I want to work on healing after this? Do I want to work on staying with this person? Or have I had enough? Am I ready to walk away from this relationship? That can be a tough decision. But at the end of the day, my experience has been that when I work with couples through counseling, how they feel about it in the acute stage in the beginning and then how they feel about it later, after they've done this deep work, is mind-blowing, the growth that can take place. But it really is a decision because it takes a lot of work.
Okay. Last thing. On page 35 in your book, you talk about being cautious about talking to family and friends, because I do know sometimes talking to family and friends, how does that impact us?
So oftentimes, yes, that is a great section of the book because I see this come up so much. And so I said, let me put this in marital peace so people can have really some guidance in this area. But, yeah, I go into a lot of detail about that because I see it come up a lot where a couple is having problems in their relationship. Then mom calls and they said, Mom, let me tell you about what's going on in my relationship. Let me tell you what just happened. And so for that person, oftentimes in that moment, they just want to get some relief. They just want to get things off their chest, hoping that they'll feel better. And maybe they do feel better in that moment. The mom says, you know what, keep hanging in there. Or the mom says, you know what, you need to stop dealing with that no good joker. Oftentimes, my experience has been that family members do not forget what the person shared with them during a moment of pain, frustration, anger, depression. So let's fast forward now. Now it's Christmas. Now it's Thanksgiving. And we're going to go to mom's house. The mom, how do you think the mom is going to be responding to that spouse when they come over?
Mm-hmm.
They're going to be giving them the side eye a little bit. Oftentimes,
mm-hmm.
parents, even though the couple, you as a couple, y'all might have worked through that thing. Maybe you went to counseling and you've gone through all the stages of the healing process. That family member is not there with you during that, all of the counseling and the work that you're doing. And so they may bring it up later. That may make them uncomfortable being around your spouse now. That might create division in the relationship between that parent and now the spouse. And so we have to really be cautious as to how much detail we're going into with family members about what's happening in marriage.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So that goes back to if you feel like you need to tell a third party, you have to tell somebody, pack it up and take it to a counselor.
Yes, absolutely. Take it to therapy. Where you have an objective third party, because your mama loves you. She's going to definitely be hearing things from your perspective. Is your mother, is your family member going to really be able to be objective as a therapist would? I doubt it.
Yes, absolutely. Dr. Lewis, I want to say thank you so much for joining us on the Amazing Relationship Podcast. Now, where can people find your amazing book, Marital Peace?
People can go to my website, AtlantaCoupleTherapy.com, and it can be purchased right on the site. I actually have a discount code for right now for the next 7 days. If people enter marriage, the discount code marriage, you'll get 50% off the book for the next 7 days.
Thank you so much. And that'll do it. Thank you for joining us on the Amazing Relationship Podcast. See you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Amazing Relationships Podcast with Kim Wilson. Want more? Visit kwspeaks.com. That's kwspeaks.com for the latest inspirational blogs.